This is Colorado Matters from KCFR News. I'm Ryan Warner. The remains of as many as 35,000 U.S. servicemen from World War II could still be recovered. Across the country, many family members hold out hope of finding their fathers, husbands, and brothers. Patricia Gaffney Kindig of Lakewood managed to track down her father's remains, but Ralph Jones of Aurora doesn't believe he'll ever bring his father home. Both are members of the American World War II Orphans Network, or AWON. They're helping others track down relatives who died in the war and hoping to keep alive the memory of the tens of thousands still unrecovered. Patricia, Ralph, welcome to Colorado Matters.
Thank you very much.
Now, Patricia, your father was Lieutenant George Gaffney. He died before you were born, serving with the Army Air Corps. First, how did he die?
Well, we've discovered many years later, since the day he went missing, that his plane crashed into a mountain in the Finisterre mountain range in Papua New Guinea.
Which you have noted is end of the earth in French.
Yes.
And it felt that way to you, I bet.
It did. New Guinea, to me, as I was growing up, was sort of a dark place. I call it there was a sliver behind my eyes, an image. It was dark and stormy, and I thought it was a place that existed only in the past, and it was a place where men went and then never returned.
Tell me about why you decided to search for your father, a man that you never knew.
There were times during my childhood that I thought about him, and then it seemed there were many, many years when I didn't consciously think about him. But in 1993, I happened to see a young woman named Janice Olson on Good Morning America. She was talking about her research into World War II aircraft wrecks in Papua New Guinea, and I was so shocked to hear that. I kept turning up the television. My hearing kind of went away. I contacted her, and she helped me sort out papers that I had and to understand what those things meant and try to get as much information as possible. Unfortunately, my mother is still living, so she was able to help me.
May I ask how old you were at that time?
15 years ago, I was about 49, 50.
Right. Is the point where you realize you want to embark on this journey?
It just sort of presented itself. It's not that I sought it out. It just suddenly was in my face, you know, suddenly was there. And I realized, hearing her, that my life had changed. I knew my life had changed and would never be the same. And that this was a crack in the door that I had to pursue. I knew I had to pursue this. I contacted Janice, as I said. 18 months later, we went to Papua New Guinea together. And I hired a private pilot and went to the places where my father had been. And I buried a box of mementos I had brought with me, gathered from the family, photographs telling my life story and my children. It was like presenting a story to my father. And I buried it in the kunai grass next to the airstrip where he had taken off from.
Ralph, your father was a naval aviator.
That is correct.
He died in the Battle of Leyte Gulf in the South Pacific when you were two.
Yes.
Do you remember when you became aware you had a father who was missing, a father who was not in your life?
Probably around the age of four. That was about the point where I began to understand death.
What effect do you think that had on you, to not have a father there?
It gave me a rough time developing a personality. My mother had to work very hard to get me brought up, to get me through college, and without a father around, there were a lot of things I had to learn for myself, even so much as how to throw a ball.
You're in a bit of a different situation from Patricia in that you've never searched for your father because he died at sea. Is that correct?
That is correct. If I wanted to search for him, I'd have to search 100 square miles of sea bottom.
When did you become conscious of that, that you wouldn't be able to search for the father that you had missed?
Slowly over the years, as my knowledge of the war increased. The war threw such an explosion into my life that I found the only way to deal with it was to hit it up front and become some sort of an expert on it.
I wonder if it's been meaningful to you to compile as much as you can about him, to understand who the man was.
Oh, of course it has. Yeah. Of course it has.
Tell me about that.
My father was the first and last air group commander of an escort carrier called the USS St. Lowe. the St. Lo was involved in the most dangerous part of the Battle of Leyte Gulf, where it was attacked by a huge Japanese force. And the St. Lo became the first ship to be sunk by a kamikaze attack. About a third of the ship's company were lost, including my father. He was last seen making diving attacks on the largest battleship in the world, the Yamato.
How has what you've been able to learn about him influenced who you are today?
It's guided my career choices. I became an engineer like him. I got involved in flying like him, not on a professional level. And service in the military helped me quite a bit, too.
You eventually went into the military
yourself. I was an officer in the Air Force in the Vietnam years.
You've become, though, involved in efforts to help others find their father's remains.
Only to the extent of participating in the listserv with AWON. I'm the sort of person on the listserv who can answer questions like, what is a battalion, what is a Panzerfaust, how does a submarine work, and so forth.
AWON is the American World War II Orphans Network.
Right.
And how did you get involved with that?
I heard an interview on NPR one day with Annie Mix, who was the founder. And Annie talks about the wall of silence that a lot of the orphans have experienced, where they simply can't get information about their fathers. Well, this was totally the reverse of the way it was for me, because I had a supportive family. My father was a professional military officer to begin with, and I knew everything. All the information was available to me. I sort of had my own wall of silence in that my friends, my coworkers, hardly ever know about this. But that's because I'm socialized to carry my own baggage. Hmm. The idea that the wall was separating these people from the knowledge of their own fathers was just horrifying to me, so that is what got me interested in AWON.
Patricia, this idea of the wall of silence, does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. I think after the war, the men came home. So many had served and suffered and done things that they never would have wanted to do, and everybody wanted to get on with their lives. And I think we children, and there were nearly 200,000 American children who were left without a father after World War II, a very little known fact. I think we were reminders of that sadness and sorrow and the loss of their comrades. And I grew up feeling like I was the only one. And it wasn't until I found AWON myself that that was another stunning moment, breathless moment in my life, when I realized I wasn't alone, and I was already in my mid-50s. And I've since discovered that the two kids that lived next door to me also lost their father. I mean, this is how that thick that wall of silence was, and virtually all of the members of our organization do speak about the wall of silence.
And Ralph, how many people would you say are on this listserv? I mean, give us a sense for what the activity is.
A couple of hundred.
A couple of hundred. And what kinds of questions do you answer? I mean, you talked about definitions.
Technical questions about war or the military.
And that those provide clues then for people to, take the next step and get closer to the answer? Or
they might.
The listserv is part of the services, one of the services that AWON provides. Primarily, the organization exists to provide a sense of family. And I think the most meaningful part of being a member is that being able to walk into a room and look at a couple of hundred other people who have experienced the same thing you have. Our fathers served in every branch of the service, every theater of war. So AWON serves primarily as an opportunity for us to be together as a family, but also helps people wend their way through the maze of federal bureaucracies to find records, because if you don't ask for Form 160, you aren't going to get it. So that we try to help people with that, and Ralph has been very helpful in that effort.
Ralph, is it a difficult bureaucracy to wend through? Do you agree with that?
Oh, it certainly is.
I want to ask you about that sense of meeting other orphans.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a powerful experience for you?
It certainly was.
Tell me why.
Well, it's a kind of closure.
And for you, the closure comes just in meeting others,
yes,
not in finding your father.
That is correct.
How is that? I mean, tell me how meeting others provides closure.
Just a sense of sharing the adversity bond. It's one of the strongest bonds we have.
You're listening to Colorado Matters on KCFR. I'm Ryan Warner, and we're talking to two Coloradans who are associated with the American World War II Orphans Network. Patricia, let's talk more about your search. So you mentioned that this sort of fell in your lap. You were watching television one morning, and in 18 months, you get pretty familiar with the bureaucratic process.
I did. Janice led me through it and helped me understand what documents I had. And I actually did have the lodestone called a MACR, a missing aircrew report, which describes the mission that the missing aircrew is on.
And this makes it much easier to find out, huh?
It helps tremendously. It describes the name of all the other pilots in that mission that day, the weather report, who spoke to him last, what was his demeanor. It was extremely helpful.
So you had that information, which sounds like is more than most people have, and what did you do with it?
I had the good fortune to be led to a Philadelphia businessman named Alfred Hagen, who was also searching for family members' aircraft in Papua New Guinea. And I asked him a very difficult question for me: would you search for my father? And he said very simply, yes. He was planning to go again, and because he hadn't found what he was looking for. So I sent him this document, the MACR. And miraculously, about 18 months later, he did find a wreck at the right address, was on the trajectory that my father would have been. Keep in mind that at this time there were more than 300 American World War II aircraft still missing in this area.
In that area alone?
In that area. So that for us to be looking actively for one and ultimately to find it is just miraculous.
Needle in a haystack.
Absolutely. In the jungle, mm-hmm. in the mountains. The native people helped direct him to it. And to another one. Which actually two other wrecks, and I'm now married to the son of one of the men on one of those other wrecks. But due to my initiating this rescue or this search, the remains of 12 men have been returned to the States.
So in many cases, finding one of these means finding the relatives of many others.
Exactly.
Ralph has gotten closure, as I think he mentioned to us, in his way. And Patricia, tell me how closure came for you then.
Closure, my family and friends and the community, people have described having closure. But for me, it was aperture. It was all about opening something that had always felt closed.
Oh.
So it has been a profound change in my life. It's extremely empowering. I now have a grave at Arlington. And my husband's father is there also. And both headstones are engraved with, "We speak your name." Mm. That we keep them in our memory. We keep their spirit alive.
I think you mentioned at the beginning of the interview that you went to Papua New Guinea.
I did.
You had a ceremony there, but then you brought your father's remains home.
After the recovery process was done by JPAC, the Joint POW-MIA Accounting Command, which is located in Honolulu, I went to Hawaii, and I acted as an escort, brought my father's remains home.
Now, let's talk briefly, before we wrap this up, about JPAC, this agency that works with families in your position.
Their mandate is to achieve the fullest accounting of Americans missing from all wars worldwide. They are funded by the federal government. In fact, I've lobbied on their behalf. But they don't do a search. You have to present them with definite information before they go in and do the recovery.
Well, you have to know a lot already.
You do. And a lot of families are forced to do this on their own.
Ralph, leave us with this. If there are people listening who are in this situation, do you encourage people to search?
I certainly do. I certainly do.
Why?
It brings it to an end. My father doesn't have a grave. He does have a headstone. But I would like for it to be over.
I think what Ralph is saying, when I got the call saying that PNG 100 is Gaffney, in other words, that they had positively identified the site as the remains and the plane as my father's, a friend of mine said, well, you know now he's never going to knock on your door. And at the moment, it stunned me as almost a cruel comment, but she was exactly right.
That you always have this slight hope. Maybe they were wrong.
Maybe they were wrong. Maybe he has amnesia. Maybe he's searching for me. The mind just tries to understand.
I entertained that same hope up to about perhaps the beginning of my teens. By that time, it had trailed off.
Well, thank you both for sharing this story with us. We appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure.
And mine. Thank you.
Ralph Jones is a retired engineer and member of the American World War II Orphans Network. Patricia Gaffney-Kindig is president emerita of that organization.